to the world of Asea. And a little adventure I've put together for you with the great assistance of the good folks at Goodman Games.
We appreciate your effort.
I've been excited. I've been slowly drawn into the world of DCC, and I've wanted to give it a go, and looking for a little bit of a change up from Cthulhu, and this has some fun written all over it. So hopefully everybody should have access to, I don't know what you want to call them, character sheets in the journal section of Roll20. All I've done is set up your tokens. You are welcome to use the sheets if you want. I haven't filled out anything other than names. But you should have control over your own tokens. Otherwise, I'm going old school, and I've got a bunch of sheets of paper that I'll be using to kind of keep things. But I'm kind of relying on you guys to track your hardy adventurers to be yourself, so I can use your help in that regard.
No problem. I already loaded in my plus five sword.
Is it Vorpal?
Yeah, Vorpal sword. Well, my grave digger, he was digging a grave, and what do you know? There was a used grave.
Huzzah.
Recycled. You know, yeah,
and he's like, I can't just throw this sword away. I mean, so
it's understandable. Really.
Up and up, yep.
Yeah, and I was gonna be on Discord, and I've been going back and forth. I only just figured out what the problem I was having with Discord was, and so rather than change yet again, I thought we'd do Skype for this first session. We probably have two sessions to cover both of this. So we'll see how it goes. What else for housekeeping? So hopefully everyone but perhaps Gersh read the background email.
I read it.
No, you haven't read it. It's not that long. It's not long. And Gersh, I know you have mad reading skills.
Yeah.
But your characters have had this sense of unease over the last several weeks and months, and you know, no better way to describe it than the fact that, you know, you are living a life, have been living a life that isn't your true destiny. And you've been having strange dreams from time to time. And ultimately, at some point, a woman in blue appeared to you in your dreams and had beseeched you to become her ally. And she, you know, pledged to fight your enemies together, the enemies that you both have. She will fight on your behalf, you will fight on her behalf, and she will help you take back the life that was promised to you. And during this time, you were called in a stronger and stronger way to the cliffs. The southern cliffs of Asea. And you start to travel from different towns and different cities. Some of you are in fact from the same town, but some of you are from far, far away. And perhaps the travel takes you several days to reach the cliffs. You find yourselves on the approaching the southern cliffs of Asea, and midday, as if upon cue, you all emerge from different parts of this forest. And if you've got the map up in Roll 20, you'll see that yellow dot is essentially map-wise where you end up. You emerge, and you see the other characters emerging as well at the same time. And, you know, perhaps if you had seen them traveling at different parts, but you certainly didn't expect them to what appears to be on the same journey that you're on. And you start to make your ways to the cliff themselves. You fully exited the forest. And you arrive, exhausted and confused, at the cliffs overlooking the ocean. The scene is exactly as it appeared in your dreams. And you are suddenly grateful, as this must mean that you are not insane. There, at the edge of the cliff, is the woman who has haunted you and your dreams for months, standing behind a long table, surprisingly set for a banquet here in this wild place. The woman is nearly 7 foot tall. She wears tattered blue dress. And for the first time, you see her face as you approach. Somehow, her head is that of a statue of a woman. Her features are inanimate and softened, as if rain and wind had eroded the statue head over time. In her left hand, she holds the severed heads. She holds two severed heads by the hair. In her right hand, she holds three.
What else is on the table? Food?
Yes. Food. Food of all delicacies. Fowl. Fruits. Vegetables. The finest quality that you've ever seen in your life, especially those of you from small towns. The quality of this food and this banquet spread out across these tables is perhaps the finest food and feast that you've ever seen.
And the heads, they look fresh, or they look like she's been holding them for a long time?
They do appear to be freshly severed. And in some cases, what could be blood or brain matter could be dripping from the what would be the start of the neck. As you approach, she holds up all five heads with her arms outstretched, as if to greet you. Then the dead eyes on the heads open, and the five heads speak to you in unison, each in their own voice.
Welcome, grave friends. I know you must have many questions, but let them wait for now. I know you must be exhausted from your journey. Sit, eat, and rest. All your questions shall be answered this day.
You notice one of the heads, a pale-skinned outlander with bright red hair, speaks in a foreign tongue. And with that, things grow silent, and you look between her and the feast in front of you. And Jason, your characters, what would you like to do?
So my human shaman, Free Your Mind, is he's going to bow and make a holy sign, and he'll sit down at the table.
Okay. And the rest of your characters generally?
I think my dwarves would definitely sit down. My halfling glove maker, Magnum Sheepskin, is going to kind of hold back a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, and it should be noted that while there are a number of humans here, there are also a number of demi-humans, perhaps foreign to some of you, but dwarves and elves that are certainly part of this group. I think even a halfling. John.
We find demi-human offensive, but we'll take it.
just for that, my demi-human will sit beside me.
Right? For artificial person.
Yes. Lingonberry, the elf, will come and sit beside you and start to sample the wares. Drudge, the slave, will kind of sit in the back and kind of observe, because he's not used to taking initiative. Flem, the dwarven herder, will sit down at the table, and Gorm, the beggar, will as well. So,
wonderful. And Rex, your characters, what would they like to do?
Well, Daryl and Harold kind of took this in and have had a little consult. And Daryl is the smarter of the two in the sense that he does not have a negative intelligence modifier. Mm-hmm. So Daryl walks up to the woman holding the heads and says, I see you've got those heads there. My brother and I could bury those for you for how about 5 copper?
You get no response. You know,
three copper.
you do believe that her head is certainly made of porcelain or stone of some kind, but not only is it motionless, but it is quiet. Otherwise, she is also still.
Daryl kind of looks at Harold, shrugs, and they go and sit down. Durin will go find the dwarves and sit down and touch base with them. And Weary, what are you doing? Weary's kind of off on his own, just keeping an eye on everybody. Didn't seem to really connect with anybody. He's kind of from the same area as Daryl and Harold. He didn't really connect with them, so he doesn't really know anybody. So he's just kind of on his own.
Kyle, your characters, what are their plans? Like to join the feast, or do they have something else that they'd like to do?
Well, Bob and Pip. Bob steps up. He's dressed in overalls. So is Pip. Bob says, my name's Bob. I'm a turnip farmer. This here's Pip. He's in the rutabaga game. And we're going to join you guys. This food looks delicious. So they sit down. And Gror, the dwarven, looks like a stonemason. He's got his rock hammer. You can see in his belt. He sits down with the other dwarves, says nothing. And then a fairly well-dressed elf stands back, clearly disgusted by the heads. Have the heads dripped onto the table at all?
No, she's standing a couple feet away from the table as if, her arms were kind of not as fully outstretched as they were before, but she's kind of drawn them in maybe about a quarter of the way, and she's just standing motionless. You know, remember, she's about 7 feet tall, so she kind of towers over the scene. But
she's standing on the ground, right? She's not
Interestingly, you can't see her feet as her fine, or I should say tattered blue dress is
but she's not beyond the cliffs.
She's not beyond the cliffs, correct.
Well, the elf looks disgusted by the heads, and he stands back from the table and doesn't sit down.
Magnum will go fist bump.
He's
hail, he's friend.
Dasher's unsure how to respond.
Magnum's looking straight up.
Gersh, your fine characters. What are their plans?
So Melkin, Dwayne, the dwarf, you know, exclaims loudly, a feast after a long journey. And he goes and sits, not necessarily next to the other dwarfs, because he's not, you know, snobbish like that. And the elf responds in dwarf himself. His name's Il Tiriadhel. And he claps Melkin on the back and goes and sits with him. Flormhaven, Twinkle Spat, Jagarthia Smith III. sort of looks about the table. Of course. Looks about the table and sort of you know, looks in his book and tries to shy away and sits down sort of at the edge of the table, pretending not to be part of anyone. And Queef the Lesser, the halfling, decides to walk up to the statue and look up. It's like, "You're tall, lady," and takes a seat at the table as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, and just to be clear, it's really only her head that is truly a statue. I mean, she is motionless, but not without the ability to... the rest of her body appears to be flesh, although quite large. And then, so for those of you who are sitting, which I think is just about everybody at this point, you start to partake in the meal. And of course, maybe not of course, but to your satisfaction, it is, as you saw it, it is the finest food that you can remember eating, and the variety and the quality. Somewhat surprisingly, the meats are hot, although there appears to be no stove or fire around to keep it such. For those of you who are partaking in a drink, some of the finest meads and ales that you've had and tasted, although perhaps every eighth or ninth plate that comes your way to be served as you're passing things around is actually quite spoiled. You know, perhaps the mutton has maggots crawling out of it. The berries are green with fungus. Not every plate, but every, like I said, every eighth or ninth plate that comes your way is in quite bad shape in physical appearance and smell. Jason, for your characters, anything in particular that you want to eat that you're craving or you want to try?
Well, my halfling hanging back with Kyle. What's your elf's name?
Dasher.
Dasher. Magnum looks up at Dasher and says, "Those humans, they'll eat anything. That's disgusting." But the dwarves, of course, pay no mind. The fungusier, the better. Frior, the shaman, he's tucking in. Maggots, not as much, but he'll eat some fungus. So they're showing no objection to the food. Okay. It's been a long journey.
Got it. Okay. John, anything suit to your fancy? Just assume that if you desire it, for the most part, you'll probably find it.
Fine meats, pastries, ales, just whatever looks appealing to them. Maybe some fine roasted vegetables if they're available.
Of course. Some of the finest bell peppers. That you'd only heard come from the southern lands somehow appeared here.
If it's too exotic.
That was impressive.
Yeah, it was. This is an impressive module here.
Rex, what strikes you as something that you'd like to try, or character you'd like to try?
Well, Durin's gonna, you know, kind of eat like the rest of the dwarves and you know, drink ale and that kind of thing. Daryl and Harold don't really seem to care that much about the rotted, stinky plates. When they, it's not like it puts them off their appetite. They don't eat that stuff, but they don't really care. And so they're eating stuff that looks familiar to them. Mm-hmm. It looks too exotic, and they're just passing on. And Weary takes, like, when the rotted plates come, he actually starts kind of collecting them and just kind of surrounding himself with them, and he gets kind of a wistful smile. He doesn't eat any of the rotten food, mm-hmm. but he's almost making like a little scent garden around him, mm-hmm. from the rotten stuff. Mm-hmm. and he's picking things to eat that he's never tried before. So.
Okay. Wonderful.
So those exotic peppers, he definitely wants to have some of those.
Oh, so. Very, very popular. Very popular. And Kyle?
So Bob and Pip are trying a little bit of everything except the rotten stuff. And they're quizzing each other, challenging each other to determine where each item is from, what region, and what sort of soil it was grown in. And then they do go on about the spoiled stuff, talking about, well, they just don't know how to store this. Mm-hmm. I mean, the proper kind of structure, you need to dig a pit and you get your underground storage all figured out. That's how you fix this kind of problem. So they're going on and on. Yeah. Gror is just eating silently with the other dwarves.
Mm-hmm.
And Dasher is still disgusted and horrified by everything that he's seeing in front of him. And he's not sitting down, he's not talking to anyone, and he can barely look at the table.
All right. And Gersh, how do you partake in this feast?
So we got Ilteri and Melkin sort of chatting along and grabbing what meets her fancy. Nothing of the rotten food. But Flormhaven, Twinklespatrick, Arthur Smith III decides to start picking at some of the maggots, and he's kind of collecting them on his plate and sort of playing with them. He's not eating them, but he's collecting them and sort of looking at them and trying to decipher what kind of maggots they are and perhaps what fly they'll eventually turn into.
Mm-hmm.
And the queef just drinks.
Get it.
Wonderful, wonderful. And naturally, as perhaps the ale and the mead flows, those of you who are inclined to be a little bit more social are making fast friends with those at the table. The good food and drink are certainly contributing to some loose tongues and perhaps sharing of stories and lives that you've left behind. This goes on for a bit of time, and certainly as time goes by, you are getting your fill and you start to feel quite full from the meal. And at that point...
Hello?
Hello, Gersh. Can you hear me? Anybody else hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Everything went quiet really quickly.
Yeah, can you hear us now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. So you guys are full from the feast, and the woman in blue starts to animate herself, and then she addresses you again using the severed heads that she continues to hold. And she begins, and this one's a long one, so hold on. Thank you, friends, for taking the dangerous journey to be here today. I know each of you, your minds and your hearts, and yet I must keep my identity veiled. If I were to even think my true name, it would instantly be sensed by our enemies, and they would race here to break our fellowship and confound our plans. Please let me be known to you as the Lady in Blue. Trust that I am your friend, and not one that would mislead you. Know this, our enemies, who are indeed the enemies of all right-thinking people of this world, have kept you from living the lives you were meant to live. Each of you was born under the wrong stars, a misfortune fostered upon you by our enemies. But I wish to be your ally. I can set this misfortune right. If you wish to have me for an ally, I ask just this, that tonight, when the full moon reaches the top of the sky, you step off that cliff and onto an invisible bridge that does not yet exist, but shall exist tonight. This bridge will take you on a long journey across the ocean. This journey will be difficult, and some of you may not live to see its end. But those who do shall find the hole in the sky, a porthole to another world. That world is a prison, and its warden is a titan, a fierce creature that cannot be slain by mortal means. This titan keeps a prisoner in a cage of alderwood. Its prisoner is our ally, and to say her name aloud would give my presence away to our enemies. And at that, the lady in blue takes up a cup of wine from the banquet, and she carefully pours it on the dusty ground around the table. And for a moment, you see a word written there on the ground. And I just pulled it up on the map, for those of you not looking.
Frior throws up the devil horns.
Nice.
A moment later, a mass of beetles bubble up from the earth and devour the word. An instant later, they disappear, leaving only bare ground. Never speak the name aloud, friends. I would ask that you take this bridge tonight, under the full moon, to the hole in the sky. Free our ally. Those who do shall be my trusted friends, and I shall set their stars right with this. And she makes a slow turn. And she gestures, and you hear an immense tearing noise, as if the spinning of the world was grinding to a halt. Incredibly, a seam opens in the morning sky, and you are looking through it into another world, one where a massive black monolith is the epicenter of what seems like the mother of all storms. The wind blows so hard, you are all shoved back several feet, almost to the edge of the cliff. As your eyes adjust, you see that the monolith is actually the edge of an immense black wheel. The wheel turns slowly and seems to be made of the night sky itself. You see stars clustered in groups or shining alone in its surface. As it spins, you feel as if reality itself might slip from beneath your feet at any moment. You clearly hear every word the lady in blue speaks, despite those hurricane winds. This is the Wheel of Destiny, one of the posters of the universe. For each brave friend who aids in the rescue of our ally and returns, I shall allow them to spin it once, one time, and the true destiny you were meant for shall be yours. And with a gesture, the lady in blue closes the seam in the morning sky. The winds dissipate. You see that the remnants of your feast have all been blown into the ocean. Splash. And all goes quiet. And you are looking at each other, and she stands before you, again motionless.
Frior is on board. He's got a pound of herbs, and he's ready to go.
So it's morning, and bridge doesn't appear until night.
That is correct. And as the map indicates, and as perhaps some of you who are either from there or from the area, or perhaps have traveled through, you do know there's a small town of American not too far away. It's probably closer to midday at this point than morning anymore, but yeah.
Well, anybody up to water for supplies in lovely Merkin?
Queef would love to go.
Magnum, the other halfling, would also.
Yep.
I've got 34 copper burning a hole in my pocket.
Let's hit the tables.
I told the missus I'd bring back something nice.
From all right. American. Pair of shoes.
Yeah, so... does anybody want to stay behind, or is everybody going to go?
Freeor is going to commune with nature, so he'll stay behind.
Okay.
Daryl and Harold will stay behind. Daryl has raised his hand, though, now that she's done talking.
And with that, as you guys are kind of making your plans... The Lady Blue springs back to life, and this is only just moments, perhaps, after her prior presentation ended. The voices or the heads in her hands say, "What say thee to my call?"
Sure, we'll Darryl, go.
We'll go.
Daryl's got his hand.
Daryl, and as you raise your hand, she. Her right arm, which is holding the three severed heads, kind of moves in your... She kind of moves that hand in your direction. And you get the sense she wants you to approach.
So Daryl puts his hand down and he kind of dusts himself off and he walks up to her. And, ma'am, what was the middle part again?
What say thee to my call?
Harold, she's not going to tell me the middle part again. You in? Harold's counting the rest of the members in the party, and he appears to be doing some kind of math. And then he nods his head that he's in.
All right.
And my brother, we're in.
She appears to be moving the heads down to your level. You know, she's kind of leaning forward a bit. You know, her legs are still, we presume her legs. And she kind of bends over a bit. And at that point, one of the severed heads kisses you on the forehead.
Kisses Daryl on the forehead?
Yeah, whoever agreed to go gets kissed
on everyone the forehead. Or just Daryl and Harold?
Well, as she hears each of you kind of agreeing, whoever agreed to go,
yeah,
gets a kiss from the severed head.
All right.
And she turns to all of Jason's characters and says, "What say thee to my call?"
We are all in. All
right. And one by one, you all get kisses from the severed heads. And Rex, I already did you. John.
Yes, of course. I've agreed.
Of course. Oh, smooches all around from severed, bloody, icky heads. And Kyle. Are you in?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, Bob and Pip are like, sure. And then Gror just shrugs and steps forward. But Dasher looks horrified. He says, "You're all crazy. Look at these disgusting heads. No, I have nothing to do with it."
Fare thee well. And you feel like you're being dismissed. And who was that? That was Gore?
It was Dasher.
Dasher.
The elf.
Says no.
We have a survivor.
Struck by lightning. Yeah.
All right. Gersh, your character.
Were any of the heads female?
Sure. One of them
all
is.
Right. All right. We all agree, and Queef goes up, and right when he gets kissed, he leans up and kisses the female head instead.
Okay. Maybe a little tongue action? I don't know.
No. Romantic, though.
Just okay. Out of fear, the tongue may, like, fall out the back of the hole in the neck.
Might push it out. That's okay.
That's all right.
All right. So some of you are going to stay behind. Some of you are going to American. Dasher, are you going to leave the area? What are you going to do?
Yeah, Dasher's actually going to follow the group into town.
Okay. Fair enough.
But he's not staying near the statue or the heads.
Got it. All right. So those of you who stay behind, you can practice your meditation or, I don't know, clean your pitchforks, whatever you have. Those of you who go to American, yeah, it appears to be, you approach, it's not too far of a journey. I don't know, what is that, half a day away? a third of a day, I forget. But whatever it is, it's...
as long as we make it back by time.
Yeah.
So a hex is 3 miles.
Yeah, certainly enough time to get there and back before the moon will be high in the sky. It's a tiny fishing village. It certainly appears to be set up to take advantage of its location by the ocean. Tiny village, a number of buildings. Over some time, you discover that they do partake in trade of some kind. You get some curious looks from the locals, but over time, even though perhaps your numbers are not quite doubling their population, you do find that it is well-stocked. And should you have the money, most anything that is available in the regular supply list is available to you for purchase.
Magnum Sheepskin has some gloves. He's a glove maker. Mm-hmm. He has some gloves he'd like to sell while he's here.
Okay.
They're the finest lambskin.
Yeah, yeah. You can get a 90% value, 90% to the dollar, to the coin, for any goods that you have. Trade for items from other lands and other places are quite in demand. So there's a good trade value from that. So Jason, did your gloves have a value for them? 4 pairs of gloves. Hmm.
Hell, I don't see anything on here. Yeah.
That's the equipment.
Some of the finest gloves. Let's say that you can get a gold piece each for them.
Oh, well, sold. I'm gonna sell 3
money bags.
3 pair. Okay. Sure. Anybody have any trade or purchases they'd like to make?
Throwing money around like that.
Bob and Pip each have goats with them, and realize that they probably don't need two goats.
Yeah,
so they're gonna sell. They're gonna sell one of the goats.
1 platinum piece.
It's a fine goat. We're going to sell the finest goats that they have.
Yeah, are these
the runtier goat they'll keep with them?
Are these milking goats? I asked as if I knew.
Sure.
Ah, fine.
They're sporting goats.
Sure,
sporting
you can goats. You can get some milk out of them.
It depends on what you milk.
You can milk anything with nipples.
Just give that there thing a tug. Get whatever.
Watch where she.
So what's the going price of stuff? Like, is the price in the equipment list the price things are selling for?
Yeah, standard prices. Do you have access to that?
I'm looking at it.
Okay. Except it doesn't have any pig prices, so.
Yeah.
So I'm going to spend some of my copper, and one guy's going to buy some rope, and another guy's going to buy some water skins and some other stuff. But Queef is actually going to buy himself. He's going to go to local armorer and see if he can hammer out a deal. And buy some amazing padded armor.
He's going to the blacksmith to hammer out a deal.
Padded armor. Because he has money, so he's going to actually spend his money.
Okay. Yeah. Why don't you guys take a moment, and I'm not going to get too... If you've got money, great. You know, if you got something to sell and you got to make up what it may get you, think of a gold piece or two for, I don't know, I see someone's got a pound of clay. Elven clay. Oh, it's fine.
Well, it looks like I don't see a price for goats in here.
Uh-huh.
But a donkey or mule would fetch 8 gold pieces. So
let's maybe
4 or 5 gold for a goat, a good goat.
I'd go for 4 on you. I'd go for 4.
How much for a sow?
A sow? Is it healthy?
It seems to be, yes.
Yeah. Young, old?
Young, yes.
Fat, fed well?
Fairly well.
No, this is a fine pig. What? Where would I find something like this? This is wonderful. We've been looking to diversify our stock here. How about 4 gold pieces?
All right. Yeah, you're sold.
Good jeans.
You've got a pig on your hands.
Come to daddy.
Just ate several plates of rotten food. It's good to go.
Kyle, tell me about Dasher. Did he struck up a friendship with anybody?
No, I mean the only person he really interacted with was who was the halfling?
Magnum.
Jason's halfling, Magnum. So he's kind of lingering around Magnum. He doesn't feel comfortable around the humans or the dwarves. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Magnum, you're in the process of selling your gloves, and after you get the fine price, fine offer from the local, you turn to give Dasher a nice smile of satisfaction and victory.
That's some good selling.
He's gone. As you turn, Dasher. You don't see him.
And he's an elf, so he's tall. So if he was around, I'd definitely see him. So he'll look at, was it Pip?
Yeah.
What was Pip? And say, where'd your buddy go there? The pointy-eared one.
Elf? I don't know. I don't know any elves.
You know, the one that was with me.
So Bob leans over and says, "The elf, you moron." We haven't seen him. We don't know where he is. We're selling our goats.
And getting distracted by all the selling, Magnum sees a shiny dagger, and he goes to barter with the seller of the dagger.
Okay. All right.
So he'll buy the dagger and then he'll kind of walk around, looking up at a 45 degree angle, trying to keep an eye out, wander around a little bit.
Okay. Does anybody else have any other deals they need to make?
Yeah, Flynn's going to give some gold to Gorm because he's only got a sling, but no sling stones. So we're going to buy, I guess, 60 sling stones for using the standard equipment.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, so that's going to be 2 gold for him. So we're using 2 of the 4 gold we acquired for the selling of the pig.
All right.
Pip's going to buy an axe with his goat money.
Nice. Now we're all stocked up.
Actually, that's true. So if we're not skilled, like, since it's a 0-level weapon,
mm-hmm.
like, how's that work? Like, if I wanted to switch the weapon that my guy has, can I do that now and just he'll be good at what he has, or he sucks if you buy something new?
I think rule-wise, you're supposed to, do a dice down the chain from there, but we'll probably just let it go.
Okay. In that case, let's get some range.
Let's get some long swords all around.
No, ranged weaponry. I don't think anyone probably has.
I've got a sling.
What, never mind. Weapons are fucking expensive.
Yeah,
very
expensive.
Never
yeah,
mind.
Expensive. There's a lot of Samring going on right now.
Pip apparently has
10. Hey, man, I learned from the best. That's good.
Pip apparently has 10 feet of chain on him that's worth 30 gold pieces. That's
nice.
Crazy. But he's not going to sell it. That's way too valuable.
I do have some rope, but I don't have chain.
Yeah, Dasher had 50 feet of rope, but who knows where.
So.
All right. So you can continue doing that at your leisure. The hours pass. Perhaps you've made some new friends in town. Perhaps you've pissed off a couple of fishermen. I don't know. But American is on the map, and you know it as a small fishing village.
Please, some fishermen's wives.
So, can we ask anybody if there's anything, you know, what if there's anything that's been off the book that had any travelers in here in the last who've gone on to better things, or are they just merchants that come through here? I'm trying to see if anybody knows about the people on the cliff.
Yeah, when you say the people on the cliff, who do you mean?
If they have heard tales of this lady on the cliff.
Yeah, interesting question there, John.
John's
are
a good work there.
You are able to find an old timer. Flynn Barb is a man of the ocean and is tending to his net, perhaps mending it from years and years of use. And you strike up a conversation with him. He's able to recount to you that you're not the first large group of those from other places to come to American. Although it's been a number of years, he can think of, best of his recollection, several large groups that come in from time to time and in search of materials. That helps the trade, mind you. But certainly curious when it happens. But those of us who have been around, I guess we've grown used to it. Don't make much of it. The money's good. They don't cause trouble. But you certainly seem to bring some of your funny, short and tall friends with you. Yeah, certainly not the first. Okay.
And whatever happened to those other folk? Did they just disappear, or did they just pass through, or they stick around?
No, I mean, it seemed to be a one-time visit. Can't say that I remember seeing any of them again, at least here in American.
Okay.
You know, we're not a vacation resort anyway. I don't know why they'd come back.
Guys, this is going to be fine.
All right.
We're good.
Let's go back. It's already started.
All right. So evening and then night approaches. Unless you have something particular you need to do, you can make your way back to the cliff and join the rest of the group.
Yep.
Perhaps some of the discussion is about you're down a member, someone's disappeared.
And Frior only has 15 ounces of herbs instead of 16.
I keep track of it.
It's in my inventory.
Gonna mark that down.
And I guess for those of you, this happens while the group is away in American, the group that stayed behind. At some point, for those of you who are watching, you see the Lady in Blue. She sinks into the earth. Almost without a sound, and basically just sinks straight down into it without any digging or anything, just boop, and she's gone.
Okay.
That's cool, man.
And of course, those of you who get, when you get back from American, you notice the Lady in Blue is gone, and your friends who stayed behind have a story to tell. And you have a story to tell them about the missing Dasher.
Okay. Yeah, and as we're walking back, Magnum will kind of keep an eye out and keep asking around if anybody has seen the pointy ear.
No one has.
Of course not.
Of course not. All right. It is
Daryl
night.
Goes over to examine the spot on the ground where she disappeared, just to make a professional assessment of the ground and whether digging might.
You know from holes.
Yeah. Harold just stands a little bit in awe watching Daryl do his thing. So.
All right. Night approaches and the moon begins to rise or has already risen. You see it coming up. Almost kind of due south of the cliffs. You might remember that the Lady in Blue, as she was describing the invisible bridge, actually pointed in a specific direction. And for those of you who were paying attention, the direction she pointed lines up almost directly with the rising moon. And the moon continues to rise and is approaching its zenith. This is probably your last chance to do anything before the moon gets to the very top of the sky.
Well, let's start testing the waters here. Is there? You see anything yet?
Where are you looking?
Where the bridge is supposed to appear. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, you don't see anything yet. Or you don't see anything.
Weary goes over to where Daryl's standing, examining the ground, and he scoops up a handful of the soil and puts it in his pocket.
Nice. So the moon isn't quite yet where we think it needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's awfully close. I mean, you're expecting the time is nigh.
I don't think there's anything I need to do before we.
Yeah, let's
start testing the water.
Okay. What would you like to let's start? Yeah. So.
So I'll put up a sacrificial lamb. Mm-hmm. Bull Quarryman, my dwarven miner, mm-hmm. will take out his 10-foot pole, mm-hmm. and start tapping in the air where we think the bridge is supposed to be.
Okay. Yeah, you approach the edge of the cliff,
and he's tapping.
Tap, and the first couple swipes miss or don't hit anything, and kind of. Poke their way into nothingness. But perhaps on the fourth approach or fourth try.
Nice.
You hit something solid. It certainly can't see anything. Perhaps being an invisible bridge and all. but something is there where there shouldn't be something.
Right. So he'll continue on, and he'll keep tapping in front of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you start working perhaps side to side a bit. Does anybody else want to help him?
Yeah, we'll follow him. Yeah, help him out.
Okay. So,
yeah.
John, you have a character in mind that's got a plan?
Yeah, Drudge will kind of fall behind him. He's got a club, and he's going to kind of tap on the sides to see if he can follow him along and see if we can see how far this bridge goes, if it goes out there, how wide it would be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to help out?
Daryl gets his...
Follow along.
Okay. So after a moment, we've got a gang of characters.
Is there any trees or anything? Grab a branch or something?
Grab a branch, yeah. Yeah, within a couple moments, after seeing some early success from Bull, I think it was, you've got a group of characters who are kind of feeling things out. And it only takes you a handful of moments, but you start to think that you've got at least the initial part of this bridge closest to the cliff felt out. And your best guess is it's about 20 feet wide.
All right. Well, I guess we got enough room for all of us to go.
Plenty of room.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some of you who are a little bit more industrious, perhaps even picked up what you think is, it might be about 2 feet thick.
Okay.
Mm. And even a few of you touched with your hands, and certainly you can't see it, but it feels like it might be cobblestone, which is certainly a rarity in these lands.
Mm-hmm. Slate carver is the stonemason is appraising the invisible stonework and yes. And kind of yep. He like bends down and licks it. That's good work.
Rur's kind of doing the same. He's also a stonemason.
Those are nice cobbles.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly, at least to the touch.
Tightly
packed cobbles. Smooth nice stones.
Tight and firm.
What you suspect is the mortar in between the stones is quite well formed and solid.
Good, firm, round cobbles.
But entirely invisible to your eyes. Even those of you who might have infravision or something in the dark. Can see nothing beyond your normal vision.
Errol gets a shovel full of dirt and walks over and kind of slings it out onto where everybody else is pointing out this bridge thing is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dirt spreads out and it covers an area several feet out from the cliff and in a form that seems to align with the 20 feet wide area that you discovered or intuitively figured out before. It acts very much like there's something solid leading out from the cliff directly into the ocean or, you know, beyond the ocean, into the ocean area.
Well, we should start moving on this bridge.
Daryl turns to everyone and says, "We're going to need more dirt."
Slate and Bull will just kind of keep walking.
Keep
walking. Slate trusts the stonework under him.
Yeah. Okay. So Slate steps onto the bridge.
Same with Gavir.
Yeah. Well, I've got all my characters are on the bridge.
Yep. So. We're all going.
All right.
And the goat. Bob has the goat.
Get on out in front, Bob.
Get on out in front, Bob.
Giddy up.
You'll notice his goat's name is Bob.
Bob's goat's name is Bob?
It is.
Nice.
It was lowercase b. Oops. You just don't know.
Nice.
We're going to start playing naval minis.
Trafalgar.
All right, so...
I'm over.
Great War Naval Action.
The group tentatively starts, and some of you more confidently, it sounds like, start making your way into off the cliff, taking your first steps, and shortly find yourself standing without support over the beginnings of the ocean as the waves crash below you against the rocks. The night is calm, but the ocean is not necessarily fierce, but is quite active. But you are on an invisible bridge, and I'm going to need some idea of how you're going to, you know, navigate your way forward, if that's in fact the way you want to go. You know, you've touched on a couple of ideas, but... not sure how much dirt you can carry with you, how many poles you have, who's got what? What do you want to do? What's your plan for navigating this bridge, invisible bridge?
So my shaman will give the other dwarf his 10-foot pole. So both my dwarves have 10-foot poles, and they'll like stake out. You know, they'll kind of feel their way forward and like hold the poles up, mm-hmm. kind of being road markers on the outside of the bridge, mm-hmm. kind of slowly making their way forward.
Mm-hmm. And Drudge and Flim, Drudge has got a club and Flim's got a staff, so we're going to be kind of tapping on as well to kind of, you know, I think we could kind of map out a rough area in front of us and kind of slowly go across the bridge.
Okay.
And so I have a couple 50-foot ropes, would it make sense to tie ourselves off for safety's sake?
Yes, we can all go down together.
Yes. There's a certain enjoyment of jumping into pits.
As a group.
As a group, exactly.
So what I've done is I've pulled up the ocean map, and I've drawn an area that should be about 4 boxes wide. It's going to be 20 feet wide. So those of you who have instruments, poles, pockets of dirt, I guess what I'm looking for now is some sort of marching order in the way that you guys are gonna do this. And if I set it up correctly, you should have the ability to kind of pull on your tokens.
And, I don't see any tokens. Where are these said tokens? Are they on the character sheets?
Yeah, well, so...
You can pull them over from the journal.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Journal.
Yeah, it looks like a little newspaper.
So are we starting on the left and going to the right? Is that the...
You're starting from over here. If you see my little blue... Yeah, who was flashing yellow. That's the edge of the cliff, and now you're heading to the right of the screen.
So whoever's on the in the water is not...
There we go.
All right, so I guess if we're back here, so my dwarves, Slate and Bull, are kind of tapping along the edges.
Yeah, I was going to say, it probably makes sense whoever's got the thing to go along the edges, and then that way everyone can just kind of stay in the center.
So we're like the survey crew staking the road out.
Yeah. It looks like I got some of you set up correctly and some of you not, but if you were to pull up... I think I can do it myself. I forget who this guy is. Who is... this John. Yeah, do John. Didn't do John any favors.
Oh, they're all the same, yeah.
Yeah. Drudge.
Can you guys see your names? I can see my name.
I can see my names, but not other people's names.
Yeah.
I can see my names and not other people's.
I can't even see my names. So.
Yeah, it's probably my roll 20. Wow, did I really mess up John's? Yeah.
That's okay. Nope. I'm used to it. I can fight that, so.
Nice.
There we go. I see some names up there.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Where John's go. Mm-hmm. Gorman.
For some reason, it looks like this bridge doesn't extend all the way, so we might need to be careful. Player knowledge.
Yeah, this is tough because my smartest character is 0 modifier. I mean, 12 is the highest intelligence. I've got 2 negative ones. So I feel like my characters are just not going to be...
I think I might have a lot of things. I might have the best batch of 0 level characters ever.
Well, I given the ability to reroll, I kept going until I was able to get a dwarf, an elf, a halfling, and a human on one nice. Fucking thing. And it made life easier once I realized I could create 50 different character sheets per button click. Because it took hundreds of rolls to get that.
Ow. Well done.
You're getting a merit badge, Kurt.
Yeah, I should. Because that way, like, I could at least have a unique, like, character class for somebody. Yeah.
All right, so that's a pretty good start. So I know that, Gersh, you said you had some rope.
Yeah. You know,
50 feet of rope is going to allow you to probably tie together, let's say, 5 feet a square. Let's call it 7 people.
Okay. So whoever's in the front... Or this, you know, so we have the guys at the poles, like, on the sides, but then, like, I would think whoever wants to be in the front, like, Malkin's in the front there, so he'll have a rope tied to him to his little elf friend and whatnot. So just if, like, the bridge suddenly just ends and they fall off, that hopefully we can catch them.
Bob's also prodding the goat along in front of him.
Okay.
Nice. So. Oh, in like, that region?
Yeah. So
okay.
So Gersh with Malkin with the rope.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to assume that everybody kind of aligned to the left of you, up to 7 okay. people. So I see.
Sure, and Flormhaven can be the last guy.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Flormhaven. Yeah. The shaman will get in on that. We're all one, man.
Yeah, we're all except for. What's his name? He decided not to come.
He was busy.
He's got shit to do.
He'll wash his hair.
It's an elf thing.
I hope Kyle wasn't like, man, I was rolling 1,000 times to find a fucking elf, and I found an elf.
No, the first 4 characters that I got is what I sent to Ty.
And just because I forgot to mention earlier, Jeff couldn't join tonight. He had to back out. He had some family stuff come up, so.
That's damn.
We're better for it.
I told him there's another funnel coming up. I know. Anchor. Dragging everybody down.
Love you, Jeff.
Love you, Jeff. Okay. Yeah, this is a good enough setup for now. So you guys start making your way forward, and... was anybody else, let's see, so you got some poles, I see you got one set of ropes set up, and the group is cautiously making their way forward. Harrell and Magnum, unexpectedly, as the group gets further and further ahead of you, and you're bringing up the rear...
We're doing fine. Everything's all right.
The solidness be below your feet disappears, and suddenly you start falling. I need you to give me a reflex save roll, please.
Sure. I could do that. Let's go get a reflex save. Oh, actually, this aren't too bad. Oh, what happens?
8. My 8 is perfect.
13.
Nah. Magnum disappears into the darkness below. Whereas Harrell valiantly...
And he just spent all that gold on a dagger.
And amazingly is able to grasp, and you guys hear his screams from behind. And he turn and see just a hand or two holding onto the edge of the invisible bridge.
Magnum could be like, oh, take my dagger. Throws it.
Having flashbacks.
I made great love.
And as you see those hands, those of you in the front, you hear a splash from beyond that area.
So I was trying to pull a tie and leave my favorite character at the back of the party. Clearly didn't work.
No. Yeah.
There's no safe order in a funnel. Right?
I'm sorry. Okay.
That lesson is now being taught.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is anyone going to go help Harold?
No one seems to be rushing to his aid.
Well, Daryl's going to go help his brother.
Daryl's going to go help. Okay. Daryl, yeah. you approach, and yeah, you come upon Harold. Appears to be hanging on for dear life.
Right. Daryl actually has 50 feet of rope, so he's going to make a little kind of lasso-y type thing and kind of throw it to Harold and say, hey, need some help over here to the rest of the party.
Okay. Yeah, with a little bit of work and teamwork, you're able to get to save Harold and able to rejoin the party, rejoin the group. Valiant save on his own accord, but also with the help of his kind brother and some of his new companions.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right. Perhaps Daryl looks over where the invisible bridge once was and sees no sign of Magnum Sheepskin.
That is quite tragic in Daryl's mind, because really any time someone dies, you really need a chance to bury him.
Bury all the
happens.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, let's pick up the pace here. Let's get moving.
Yeah.
Right. This thing's, this thing's going away fast.
Keep tapping.
All right. Daryl, Harold, you want to rejoin the party, or are you going to hang back?
No,
they're gonna scoot on up and catch up with everybody else.
Okay.
Whee, right up here.
There you go. All right, so you guys kind of move in this group, and when you're that tightly packed, you want to adjust yourself in that space. You don't have to keep moving though. Well, just assume that you're able to move safely forward. And as you make your way further into the ocean, into the darkness of night, but under the light of the moon, which is nearly full, you can sense that the bridge is starting to rise. It's on a slight incline. Perhaps just a couple of degrees. And you walk. And you walk. And you walk. And you continue to rise and rise and rise and walk. And it gets colder and colder. And provided you have no objections or other plans, you walk for so long that daylight begins to break. The day is quite sunny and is quite cold. But the sun is able to highlight your progress. And you've made it so far after hours and hours of walking that land is completely out of sight. All right. You continue your journey.
I think Frior will comment upon that and just, guys, this is, I can't see the land anymore.
Yeah, well, we don't want to lag behind or end up...
To compound matters, it's begun to rain mid-morning, the morning after your journey began. And by late afternoon, it has become a storm. Lightning, thunder crashes. Dark clouds roll in, roll out. The wind picks up. I need all characters to make a luck check.
All characters.
Uh-oh.
All right.
And keep track of anybody or let me know who fails.
Well, what would a failure be?
I think it just simply means you need to roll less than your luck.
Less than on a die 20?
On a d20, yes.
Oh, it'll actually say failure or not.
Yeah, on your sheet, there's a button for a luck check.
Luck
if you
check.
If you filled your stats out.
Yeah, okay. So. Well, that the one I did is a fail. But I'll use the luck check button from now on.
Luck check. Where would that there?
Fail, 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 fail.
The hell is the check button?
Queef succeeded, everyone else failed.
Okay. I rolled a 20. Oh, that wasn't me.
Rex.
Rex, you wasted that 20.
Yep. Wasted that 20.
All right.
So don't hit untrained, though.
I don't have a good feeling about any of these.
Don't hit untrained. Heroes.
Yeah, if you hit untrained, it rolls a d10. So.
Yeah, it should roll a d20.
Hit below that is a little button that says luck check.
Luck check, yeah.
It's all by itself. It's all by itself. Uh-huh. Happy self.
Weary makes it.
Good catch.
Goodness.
Right. Oh, Bob succeeded, and his luck's terrible.
Those of you that failed, the wind is so strong that you are blown to the side and potentially off the bridge. Let's come back to the people who are roped up in a moment. Gersh, did you have anybody that failed?
Everyone but Queef.
And of those that failed, are any of them tied up? Melkin's tied up.
Melkin and Flormhaven are tied up.
Flormhaven, okay. And what about Ill-Tiri?
He was not tied up.
Oh, Ill-Tiri. All right, so Melkin and Flormhaven are able to be saved by their tethers to the other members of the party. Ill-Tiri is blown quite strongly to the side of the... where you expect the side of the bridge, one of the sides of the bridge, the winds are swirling. He needs to make a reflex save, please, at 10. Ah.
Nice.
Saved. Ah, his nimble elven dexterity has saved him. He lands quite adroitly. All right, Kirsch, you're in good shape. Kyle, Pip, Gror, and Bob, any of them fail?
No, they all succeeded.
Ah, fantastic. Rex, how's your party hanging on?
Weary and Harold succeeded. Durin and Daryl failed. And they were not roped up.
They were not roped up. Oh, goodness gracious. The rest of the party sees Daryl and Durin blown to the side and losing their balance. I need some reflex saves, Rex, for each of them.
Here they come. Durin's reflex save. Boop. Boop.
Durin. Ha! Disappears into the ocean below. Splash.
I want to roll that high, didn't I?
Of Magnum sheepskin.
You do want to roll high. You want to roll above a 10 with whatever your dex modifier is.
Okay. And here comes Daryl.
You know, I guess I should be... correct me, smart rules people. I think you could be spending luck on this, right?
You could.
Zeros have luck, right, to spend, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I believe so.
But you got to declare.
I'm not attached enough to any of these guys to spend luck on them.
So. You can actually declare luck spending before or after the roll.
Oh, really? After?
Yeah.
Oh, well, would Magnum have used his luck to save his happy little self then?
Yeah, I think so. Magnum, Ill-Tiri. No, Ill-Tiri was fine, right?
Actually, what did Durin miss by? What do you need to roll?
He needed a 10.
Durin's got a lot of luck, so he actually would spend his luck.
Okay.
So, and Daryl actually made his, so Durin's going to spend 3 luck.
A gust of wind has brought Daryl back to the side of the bridge.
He was out to sea. Suddenly,
that's mighty fine.
John, how did you guys fare?
Lingonberry did fail his test, so.
Okay. All right.
Now we can do a reflex.
Yes, please.
Okay, so where's the reflex? Oh, there's a reflex roll. Okay.
Yeah, Lingon. And Lingon has no dex modifier. Oh, goodness gracious, no problem. Strong winds, but he's quite fine. And Jason.
I just have Frior who failed, and he's tied up.
All right. Good planning. You guys are adventurers to be. You're well on your way to being skilled.
Shaman gets it.
Skilled and clever adventurers. Okay. Despite that scare, I think for the most part you guys are in pretty good shape. However, it is cold and miserable. The storm itself has subsided, but you are all quite wet and chilled to the bone. Look at your character sheets. Tell me if your character has a stamina of 7 or less. And I'm flipping through here really quickly.
7 or less?
Nope.
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 You lucky bastards.
I got a 8.
In fact, Gersh, some of your guys are quite hardy. Hardy stock. Another sign of
true
adventurous spirit and stoutness. You were able to resist any illness that may have come on from this cold and miserable environment. And you soldier on into the darkness, making your way along the invisible bridge. And it becomes night and late night and even into early the next morning, the beginning of day 3 of your journey. You start to the feast that you had a couple days ago is not kept you this far. Perhaps those of you that had some rations with you stop and share them. Perhaps a drink of water, Harold's holy water.
Goat milk, anyone?
goat milk aplenty.
Good steaming cup of goat milk.
Fresh.
Refreshing.
Fresh.
Mm.
That early morning becomes...
It tastes a little gamey.
Becomes daybreak. And perhaps... Let's see if I can do this. I'm going to move you guys a little bit back.
Nice.
Those of you at the front. You see an object in the distance on the surface of the water. And you continue to shuffle forward with your group. And you see what appears to be some sort of wreck. And as you approach even closer, and this isn't showing to scale, it's quite a bit further away than what's showing here in the map, but it appears to be a shipwreck. Your best guess is it's floating on the surface of the ocean. You know, you're certainly far enough away from land, you wouldn't expect to be any rocks or, you know, anything that would break the surface. Would probably be an island. You don't, certainly don't see that, but perhaps this wreck is just floating there. Several pieces. The motion of the waves seem to be holding it in place from going one direction or the other. Consider it to be about, let's say, a quarter of a mile away, your best guess. And you stop for a moment to take this all in. What would you like to do?
Keep on keeping on.
I was going to say, we're looking for a hole in the sky.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a long, long, miserable walk.
You keep on keeping on. And in fact, the dwarves notice it first. But a number of creatures seem to be flying and circling the wreck. Birds, perhaps.
Flying monkeys?
Perhaps not. They land on the wreck. Then they fly away or fly up from the wreck. And at some point, it appears they have spotted you. And by your best guess, there are 7 of these creatures, these flying creatures, And they make themselves visible to you as soon as I get my controls working.
Does it look like they're pulling anything shiny out of the boat, or they're just kind of flying down and flying up?
They're flying around, flying down, flying up, and then they spot
those me. Don't look like birds.
And they start to close, and they approach.
That's not a
angry
bird.
Birds.
They are, these are not birds. These are creatures. And they have, as they approach, they have warty skin and wide, perhaps their main body is the size of a large man, but the wingspan is perhaps 12 feet across. And they let out a blood-curdling cry. And they look like they're out for blood.
So I think Slate and Bull are gonna they're trying to rush forward. They're trying to we're looking for the hole in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
But as the creature approaches, I'll kind of try to poke and prod it away with my 10-foot pole.
Yeah, okay. Gorm's got his sling out. He's gonna try to start hitting these guys.
Okay. Yeah, they're swirling above you and they're flying below you, which is a bit disorienting because the bridge is invisible. Feathers are falling down on you as they swing by, the gust of air from their powerful wings. And they don't look too happy to see you. All right.
Are they attacking us?
Yes, they are coming in for blood and you start to fight them back.
Okay.
I need initiative rolls, so d20 from each player. Not each character, just each player. I need a d20 roll, please.
Just a d20.
Yeah. Oh, and if you've got somebody...
With your best
got,
initiative modifier.
Yeah, take your best dex modifier, I think, from your remaining group. Yep.
Is there actually an initiative... or do we just do a dex roll?
There's an initiative button if you filled out your stats in the kind of right-hand side of the character sheet, top under combat basics.
Mm-hmm.
So just pick whichever one's got the best initiative and roll that.
Looks like Pip.
Yeah.
All right, I got Jason at 7. Gersh at 8.
That's weird. Did mine not come in?
I got Rex at 16. I don't
should
see a
John. 17. For some reason, it didn't pick up my...
Yeah, it says I'm attempting to use a roll that's... A command roll that's...
You gotta... Whoever you're rolling for, you have to have that dude clicked on. Like, on your little...
There we go, Gorm.
Kyle.
And I don't want more.
So Rex, was your 17 total?
I believe it was
there we
17
go.
Total.
John with a mighty 2.
A mighty 2.
Yeah, mine was 17.
Okay, so I got John... Who's the 7, Jason?
Yeah, I crushed it.
Hey, I gotta beat it.
Yeah.
All right. So, yes, so we begin the mighty combat. Kyle, you're up first. Consider the creature swirling around you. You know, if you've got, I guess, first of all, the group that is tied together, mm-hmm. You have to kind of figure
we're doing
out
fine.
So. We're doing fine. Yeah.
But we're good.
Perfectly according to plan. Yeah, Kyle. What you got? You got 3 guys left.
I mean, yep.
We really don't know what happened to Dasher. Could be around.
He could show up later.
He could show
probably
up later.
Trying to kill one of us.
All right.
So we generally pick our best character to attack with.
Yeah, you're gonna attack with everybody that you got.
Okay.
So you we're doing this like rather than each character, it's each player. We'll get to go with all our characters. Of course, I'll get to go with all my funky birds, the sea shrikes.
So
conveniently labeled.
I think Pip isn't actually next to anybody or next to any enemies.
He is not. He might have to figure out something with his rope, or if he's got a ranged weapon.
Oh, he is tied to the rope.
He's with that rope.
Yeah, that's the rope group, right? So
yeah,
he doesn't have he does have a pitchfork. It's kind of long. It's like a spear. He can throw his pitchfork.
Yeah, up to you.
No, that's his trusty pitchfork. He's not gonna
says the DM.
The DM makes a skeptical sound. The player.
I'll let you roll it. I mean, I don't know how many pitchforks you have. I mean, it's
he only has the one.
It's I'll
his,
let you.
It's his trusty pitchfork.
My skepticism was not the the possibility of doing it. It's the wisdom of doing it.
Right. So I think Pip's gonna let the rope group sort itself out. So
okay.
So he's not gonna try and go charging into the one of the creatures, but Bob is right next to one of them, so he's gonna stab at it with his pitchfork.
Bob's got a pitchfork as well. Okay, give me a.
They're farmers, so it's pitchforks all around.
Very nice. Give me a 1d20 plus one, I believe.
Program. Hang on a sec. Add my damage to my sheet. Which is what, a d8 for a pitchfork? Or no? That's the damage. Like, right?
Yeah, no idea. Damage. Yeah. 1d8, yeah, and plus your strength of. I forget how that does it on the sheet, but yeah, you got a bonus.
The roll 20 strength. Sheets for this game are fantastic.
Are they?
Yeah, like if you actually take the time.
Yeah, it looks like my modifier. He should have a minus one modifier, which. No.
If you filled everything in,
sheet.
Everything else.
Looking at the wrong sheet.
Yeah. Bob has a 15 strength, so he's got a plus one modifier. But I think if you're doing it in the sheet, I think it'll pick that up.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay. Well, it says input
Gore
value.
And
he
had. More in the sheet striker going at it back and forth. Rawr, rawr, stab, stab, rawr.
So it says any attack bonus, but I have no attack bonus.
Don't It'll be on your weapons. Yeah.
Yeah. And just to verify. Nice. So you rolled. So that's the d20 plus one to hit. So you rolled a 9 plus one.
Ah, yes. You attempt to strike it, and you thought you hit it, but it's actually kind of a point where its feathers are, and you don't appear to do any damage. Poor Gore.
That was Bob, actually.
Oh, Bob. Yeah, Bob.
It was Bob.
Yeah, okay.
But now Gurr's going to attempt. Gurr's much worse at fighting than Bob. So.
Six strength. Nice.
Yeah. So. That too. The little extra window pops up saying, do you need to add anything, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I just hit submit. That was weird. I'm trying this again.
If you don't have the damage die in the weapon, it's not going to work.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that's 1d6 for his axe. Let's try this again. There we go.
Hey.
Gore. He
weakly swings at it with his mighty strength of 6.
Yes, he's got a hammer, right? His hammer seems to strike home straight into the body of this disgusting creature. You hear the crack of bone and see it.
He actually has an axe. But, Pip bought him an axe.
Oh, he has an axe. Oh, even better.
With the goat money.
Even better. Ah, the axe cleaves into the body of this creature who twirls into the ocean below and disappears. Arr. Nicely done. Nicely done. All right. I think it was everybody for you there, Kyle. Yep. Rex.
Yes.
Consider yourself able to move speed of 30. I think you can move as part of your action. So,
So here's my question.
Yeah.
Weary has a trowel, which basically is treated as a dagger.
Mm-hmm.
Is he really going to be able to actually strike any of these flying things? I don't want to call them birds.
Yeah. I mean, they are engaged with you. And so, I mean, this is kind of happening simultaneously. So they're coming at you. You're coming at them. Should you move into range, you know, and they're also quite, you know, their body is a little bit larger than a regular man. And they've got these large wings. If you can get up there.
Weary moves up.
Mm-hmm.
Weary is a gong farmer.
Mm, delicious.
So do I get a scent?
Dong?
Yes.
Yeah, so gong. O-N-G? Is that what you said?
Gong.
Gong, which I think is shit, right? He's a shit farmer.
Dung would be
that's dung.
Dung, I'm sorry. Dung, yes.
Dong is more penis-like.
Yes.
Dong is something completely farmer? Different.
Like, I'm a dong farmer.
Yeah, I don't
know. It's a
fancy way of saying mushroom farmer.
What was that, Rex?
Does he get a scent attack for smelling awful?
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a modifier.
It's not the smell that you're quite used to. But go ahead and take an attack.
He's going to take an attack. He moved up, and he's going to attack with his knife. And let's see how this goes. Let's do this. Boop. Attack bonus.
Oh, goodness. Four the fumble table.
There it is.
Let's see. That's
four on the fumble table.
Where is let's see four. Oh, your weapon is damaged. you're gonna need to nice work trowel. To repair it. So basically, your trowel's handle has separated from the blade or from the blade
perfect.
End of the trowel. Strong height of the sea strike.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Now,
the rest of your characters, the way I want to run this is that, you know, if you can't move into an empty hex, either straight on or diagonally, you're not going to be able to work through the rest of the group.
Up.
There you go. Okay.
And Harold moves up. And Harold worships his brother, so he moves right behind him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done.
Mm-hmm. All right, here come the sea shrikes.
Seashells, seashores, and seashore.
Oh, they're killing it.
All right. Oh, John. Let's see. I think John gets one of them.
Okay.
Rex,
which character is that?
Rex gets one. Kyle gets one. They're flying around. Rex gets another one. Rex gets another one.
Thanks, Rex. We appreciate your work.
John gets
I knew one. It was recent that these guys came along.
All right, the sea shrikes. Oh, goodness, they're angry. Man, they are hopped up. And number three.
Hopping mad.
Flying mad. Sea Strike 3 on Roar. Ooh, probably not good enough. I guess you guys are probably mostly, what, AC-10s?
Yep.
All right. Oh, goodness, the one on Wary. Snap. Well, even worse.
Nearly fumbled.
Nice.
And over here on John... Oh my gosh, these are the worst creatures ever.
That's good.
Let's see, who is, I got one on Queef here.
Queef.
It's never not funny.
Never,
oh, yeah.
Never Queef. Not. Ooh. 17,
oh.
Queef.
Oh, we loved you.
We hardly knew ye.
Queef.
Just left you smell.
Queef just lingered in the air ever so briefly before
just let it go.
Dissipating.
Just let it go.
Despite their fierce-looking jaws, he's only able to hit you for 1 point of damage.
All right, I'll take it.
Sometimes that's enough.
Sometimes that's enough.
Sea Shrike 7 with a 9.
Is he on?
He's on Durin, Rex.
Yep.
All good?
Or is that a hit? What'd you roll?
What's
no, he's a 10. Durin's a 10.
Yeah, probably minimum 10, right? All right. And Sea Strike 6 on Harold. Oh, snap. 1d3 points of damage. 3 on Harold.
Harold is clutched in the mouth of a shrike, and it just rips him in half, and his body splats on the bridge.
Delicious. He starts to Harold chomp on down. You. He starts to chomp on you.
Harold's like, no!
Actually, the sea shrike starts to drag the body and pulls it off the invisible bridge, and it falls into the sea.
Oh, that's even worse. No burial.
Oh, no.
Gersh.
Harold's going to berserker rage.
Gersh, you are up.
Queef. Queef mad. Queef bash. Queef. Damage.
Nice.
Ooh, 15. Oh, goodness gracious. What does he have? What's his weapon? What happens? That's a mighty strike on this strike number 4.
Takes his short sword and angrily attacks the beast that had nipped him in the bud and slashes mightily at the beast's long neck.
Gone.
Oh.
Nice.
He actually flops onto the invisible bridge at your feet.
Oh. All right.
His remaining breath disappearing.
So, two of my guys are tethered, so not much is going to go on with them. Unless, like, Flormhaven, like, goes down, like this, and then brings the rope, and then pushes everyone else off the bridge. But
well, I mean, you know, the rope's flexible. I don't have a problem with you kind of going one
half. Can you go there?
Yeah.
Okay. Shimmy.
All right. And he's going to attack the beast that killed his fellow compatriot here.
All right, Harold. In the name of Harold.
Flormhaven's very shy. He meekly approaches and swings his swings his mighty dagger.
Dagger.
Mighty dagger.
to no effect.
And then Ilturi can move 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, and he'll attack 1.
Looks number 1.
Sure. Again, the not-so-mighty dagger in his case. Yeah. Because he sucks.
Not so much.
The strength of 6. Thanks. Not so
much. All right. And Melkin, was he going to...
He's kind of the lead rope dude. He's going to hang out there.
Hang out, okay. All right, over to Jason. Your hardy adventurers to be. All right. What are they up to?
Yeah.
Those that remain.
Bull is holding on to the pole in one hand and pulls out his club in the other.
Mm-hmm.
And will swing up, kind of jumping on stubby dwarven legs at this... This guy next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there should be a die roll somewhere. There we go.
The 12. Despite his thinning arms for a dwarf, he is able to hit home with his
funk.
With his pick. Yeah, his pick. Or do you have something else? I can't. Do you buy something?
Yeah, it's a pick.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Give me a let's see. Damage of 1.
1 whole damage.
Yeah. Number 1 shrieks out in pain. His eyes glowing red in rage. He's still kicking though.
And hearing him so enraged, Slate will come over.
swing his hammer at the shrake. Whoa! Swing and a miss.
Swing and a three. Swing and a miss. Not good enough.
For 5 damage, though, that was...
Yeah, that would have been nice.
5 damage to the air. Killing blow.
All right, and it looks like you got a guy who's all roped up.
Free your mind is he's good.
Yeah, okay.
He's not sure if these things are real.
It's a bad country.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do they pay you to fuck that dog? So he's good.
Okay, fair enough. And finally, we've got John, the end of the line.
All right, we'll start off with, I guess Gorm is up at the front there.
Mm-hmm.
He will attack with his sling. So if I did this attack bonus of, I think it's a minus 1. No, it's in there, so... That's a miss, I believe.
Yeah, we're going to call that a miss.
The 3's not going to hit? Come on.
The sling
this is level 0.
The sling stone actually bounces off yards away off the invisible bridge into the ocean.
Okay, so then we're going to take... why can't we move this other guy? Can't seem to move my guys.
Make sure it's on the arrow.
I think you're in the range.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. And I'm still not getting anything here.
Yeah. So the toolbar in the upper left of the
window, I see the toolbar in the upper
right. Do you have select move selected?
Yep. I do.
You can't move your okay. So are you trying to move this guy, Flem?
I was trying to move Flem.
Where would you like to move him?
The guy closest to his right.
Like there we go.
Yep.
Okay.
And we will do the old attack there with his staff. And Flem has got a +2, actually. Mm-hmm. With his weapon once he hits. So that's not his... Yeah, I guess it
is. He's good with his staff.
Show him how it's done.
Exactly.
Hey! Oh, there we go.
Wow. Boom.
Fantabulous. And was that a natural 20?
No, it was 18.
Okay. Got it. It'll call it out, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, this sea shrike is cleaved and cut and damaged, and you smash him into the invisible bridge at your feet. And he appears to be quite dead.
All right, and then we'll take Drudge. Now I can move somebody. That's strange. Let's see. We'll take Drudge. I guess we'll move him up to here. Try to attack that guy on the edge.
Well, unfortunately, Drudge is tied up with the other
group.
Yeah, I'll let him move one hex up.
Oh, I didn't know Drudge is tied to somebody. But
yeah. I don't know if you can see that gray... marking on the map.
Oh, okay.
That's what I thought that Gersh had somebody had drawn out. So
okay,
that line of
characters. That was keeping us safe.
Yeah.
Here, let's make it better colors.
No, it's gonna kill us.
I'm having user error issues with moving my characters around, so I don't think they can move up that far. Then, so we'll move them back. And then that leaves Lingen, who is up there. Where is Lingen? He's up. He's not attached to anybody.
Correct.
All right. Now I can move him to there. And we will attack with my scissors as a dagger. So
nice.
We get plus snips.
Tell me you're a tailor. Are you a tailor?
No, we are a chandler. So
chandler. I have to look that one up.
All right. So we're 14 there. But we have
a candle maker.
Is it?
Candle maker.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a wick scissors, huh?
Yeah, yep. Snip that wick.
Yeah, got it.
How about 14? Does that hit that guy?
Oh, my goodness. With this, what is your... Oh, the 18 strength.
Stabby, stabby.
Oh, wow. I was actually right. It's a person who makes and sells candles.
That's you are good. The strongest Boom. strongest scissor wielding channeler in the land. Holy
shit!
Obviously does.
I don't know.
What the hell's your strength?
I don't know.
Flame on.
John, tell me about the demise of this sea strike. What happened?
Yeah, I'm going to go right through his eye and out the other end. And if it would cut through a wing on top of that, we could. But
let this be a lesson. Do not run with scissors. Lingonberry, do not run with scissors. You will kill someone.
All right. John, did you have anybody else?
I think... Let's see, I had a... one guy couldn't get to there because he was tied up.
Okay.
So that's it.
All right. Let me do a quick roll for something. Okay. All right. Top of the order here. Kyle.
I think Gror is going to swing his axe at the thing next to him.
Mm-hmm.
13?
13. He yells out. A fierce scream in pain. Arr! But he seems to still be kicking.
And I think this is Bob. He's going to run over and help Gror and stab at it with his pitchfork. And miss badly.
Alas, no.
Now, Pip is still tied up on the rope and can't really move anywhere because I think the rope has curved around, right? Isn't
Floam Haven is part of the rope group as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Bob sort of pinned in place, or Pip sort of pinned in place, so yeah, Pip will stay put.
Okay. Rex? Or did you have anybody else, Kyle?
No, I only have three guys.
Okay.
Because one decided not to come.
Yeah. We all make choices. Rex, what you got?
Weary is attempting to get his trowel blade and his trowel handle to become one. So I'm pretty sure that's going to take his entire round.
That takes...
So.
Yeah, he's going to be weaponless probably beyond the period of this battle. So,
yeah. So he just kind of sits down on the bridge. He's just fiddling with it. Durin is going to attack the sea shrike that is adjacent to him, hovering there on the bridge. Let's do that. Let's see what we got there. That's unfortunate, because it would have been good damage, but I don't think he's going to hit on a 5, is he?
Nope.
All right, and Daryl. Go down there, Daryl's got, he is going to attack the one that's kind of adjacent to him.
Oh, nice.
Look at that. That is, I think, a crit, sir.
That sounds natural.
That rolled a 19, unfortunately.
Oh, that is unfortunate.
But it still makes a pleasant whanging sound.
And
still gets in there real deep.
Was that on 6 or 7?
That was on whoever is right there. Six,
yeah, we can't see the numbers.
Oh, you can't see my name? So yeah, there's no way. I think it's way for me to turn that on. Yep, okay.
Nice.
What happened in that mighty swing there, Rex? Anything?
So Daryl is just berserker rage over the fact that Harold's body is not going to be interned into the soil as God intended. And he just loses all sense of his own self safety. And he just takes his shovel and he just goes with a massive overhead strike and just comes down and he actually catches the shrike with its head kind of over the bridge and smashes its head into the bridge and its neck snaps and it just flops and falls down into the water. Joining Harold on the path to the bottom.
Nasty, nasty stuff. Looks like Murray's going to have problems getting through, but he can move somewhere else if he'd like.
He's fixing that trowel.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. All right.
And it is 12:30 EST, so I'm going to depart.
Okay.
And you're welcome to play my guys out for however long you guys decide to play.
Okay. Thanks, Rex.
All right, boys. No, not a problem. Yeah. Everybody have a good night.
Good, good having you.
Night, Rex.
Night, Rex.
See you later, boys. Bye.
Can you guys go for a little bit longer?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Leave it. Yeah.
I'm also on EST time, but I only work 10 minutes away, so.
Nice. All right. So the sea strikes are up. And boy, they do not like John and Rex. Tell you that much. One swoops around. Let's kind of mix it up a little bit here. Flies overhead and starts headed for whoever's there on the rope.
Oh, that would be I think
Drudge.
Yep.
Drudge. And then this sea strike flies under the bridge and pops up and attacks Weary. Let's do that one first. 12 against Weary's AC of, let me double check.
Like 10.
Probably 10. Ooh, an 11 AC, but 12 will do it for 1d3 damage. 3 damage. Oh my goodness. Weary.
Can I do it?
Weary.
Scratch. Weary.
Weary looks a little weary for the worst.
Yeah. Poor Rex. Poor Rex. And then let's try this attack on Drudge. 15 is probably going to do it.
Yeah, scratch one Drudge.
Drudge takes 3 points of damage.
Ooh. Ouch. But he's tied to the rope and he's just, you know, corpse.
Oh no.
Yeah, is he dead there?
In the middle.
He's dead, yes, Jim. Drudge had one.
Right in the middle, too.
Yeah, for as good as you guys were doing, all of a sudden it's turned quite deadly. All right, the two remaining sea strikes are getting their revenge as Gersh and his characters approach.
Melkin, seeing his tied compatriot next to him fall, swings mightily with whatever the hell he has, the club. Smash bad, no good.
Lots of twos and threes in this.
Yeah. What's wrong with this randomizer?
Ilturi runs forward with his dagger. Missing horribly, I'm sure.
Sadly, that is the case.
Queef leaps over the dead body. He is all hyped up from having killed one before.
Ooh, nice.
In the downward motion of leaping over the dead body of his fellow tied compatriot, smashes a short sword into the head of the flying beast.
Flailed, flayed, and dead. The sea strike.
Nasty little halfling.
Yeah.
Nice.
And Flormhaven's tied, so he could only kind of...
Yeah.
He'll go back in line.
Okay. Jason.
What time of day is it?
It is... Let's call it...
Like late afternoon-ish?
It is not 4:20.
Yeah. It is... it's...
asking for a friend.
Midday. Midday? Early afternoon, probably.
But never is
so the sun is what?
The sun is past beyond, you know, high in the sky. I mean, it's starting to descend, but it's still, by our guess, early afternoon.
Okay. And we don't see any holes in the sky?
You do not see any holes in the sky.
I don't think I can get there. There's a lot of...
yeah, I mean,
so
Slate might be able to kind of head over there and move diagonally through. And
how would that be? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, well, I'll take a swing with Slate. He's pretty good at this, theoretically. Just not that good. He's tired from the walk.
Mm-hmm.
It was confusing getting over there.
Yeah, so disorienting. You know you're at the edge of the bridge, perhaps.
Yeah, a little distracted. Mm-hmm. The cobblestones are so good underfoot that he just couldn't quite commit. And Bull is just going to kind of reestablish with the group. Prior is just going to hang out.
Okay. John.
Well, we'll start out with Lingen since he's right there by the guy. Mm-hmm. And he did so well last time. So our attack.
Oh, goodness.
What is with those scissors, man?
Yeah, there's
the scissors. a mighty strike. The most
damaging weapon in the game.
Yeah.
The warm ichor of the sea shrike and the, what you presume is blood is starting to roll down your arm. How do you finish him off?
I use the scissors to slice snip one of his wings off.
Aww. Blood sprays on your already wet and smelly outfit, and the sea shrike ceases to be, falls into the ocean. All right, this was quite a painful experience for all of you, many of you.
Some others.
A number of your comrades have ceased to be. You catch your breath, and although you feel more experienced from this outing, and you each gain 3 experience points, those of you that remain.
Excellent.
I'll make a note for Rex of what's left of him. All right. So let me do a quick roll call here. Jason, Bull, Slate, and Freyr are still around?
Mm-hmm.
Freyr? John, who did you lose?
Drudge.
Rex.
So I'm assuming we're going to have to untie him and throw him off the edge.
Yeah.
Yes. Just drag him along.
Harry, yes. Yeah. Harold and Weary for Rex are out. Dasher is missing. Kyle, anybody else?
Nope, everyone else is still here.
And
I'm assuming we can pilfer what was off of Drudge's body to before we threw him off the edge.
Yeah, that would be fine. Yeah, so Drudge, you said? Oh, yeah, he's your character. So you know he's got some coin and a rock, a strange-looking rock.
Yeah.
And a grappling hook.
Yep.
All right.
Bob's going to check on Bob, the goat.
Yeah, how did Bob, the goat, handle all that?
I think he was a little panicked, but he was kind of hemmed in by all the the people on the bridge, so he was just sort of running around in a bleeding and a frightened circle.
Mm-hmm.
Bob's going to calm him down.
All right. So it's mid-afternoon, let's say. You've tended to some wounds or taken care of the dead. You gather yourselves up and continue your journey on the invisible bridge. Let's see. I'll give you, I guess, let's get back in marching order if we can. Those of you with poles and such at the front. Huh? I don't know, the roped group, are you guys going to continue to be roped up?
I think so.
Yeah, sure. Let's
I'm comfortable being
untie
tired.
Whoever, and we'll re-rope ourselves here.
Okay.
So Queef is not part of the rope group. So who wants to join the rope brigade?
Grur will join.
Nice. I only got 3 people on there? Or 2 people left on there? I can only see 2 of my characters.
Oh, one of your guys, I think, is... there you go. I see 3.
Oh, okay.
There's one dude up top.
Okay, I see, yeah.
So who's the front of the line for the rope? You want some of your guys, John, or no?
Sure. We can put Gorm in there.
So just right up there?
Yeah, we'll do those guys, yeah. And we'll, Flem will be over off on the side.
Okay. And Rex and his group will kind of fill in the gaps here. Unless you guys have other ideas.
I think that works.
Or you can use him as a wheelbarrow. out front and
that's what the goat's for.
Yeah, the goat's still around.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why I put Bob back up front.
Good. Okay. Good job, Bob.
Put Flam there. Okay.
Bob's
little Bob.
Okay. Yeah, you guys start. You've gathered yourselves. You're making your journey forward. The road, or the visible bridge, I should say, is continuing to slowly rise into the air. You pass that wreck. You know, with the sea strikes gone, it just seems to be floating and waving there. It's far, far, far below you at this point. You can't really fathom a way to get to it, and you leave the wreck behind. Your journey continues for the rest of the afternoon, and you continue on until what seems to be, let's say, early evening, as the sun is getting close to setting. Bob. So it's Bob the character and Bob the goat, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, just want to make sure I got that right. You know, why burden yourself with too much thinking? Those of you with poles out front and with Bob the goat, you get to a location where Bob stumbles, as if his foot has reached the air. Perhaps his animal senses gave him a little bit of a forewarning. Those of you with poles out front also detect the edge of the bridge. The sides of the bridge are the same. The edge of the bridge has reached, or you've reached what appears to be the edge of this invisible bridge. And
we'll hold up
there.
We'll tell everybody, hey, be careful. I think we're at the edge. Is the moon up?
You see vast, vast ocean in all directions. And evening turns to night. Night turns to day, to morning.
Son of a... My dwarves are very upset, but Frior is still... She said there'd be a hole in the sky, man. It's coming. Stay with us.
Morning turns to afternoon.
We're resting. We're not just staying there.
To evening.
You're tired.
It's 4 o'clock. 4:01. No, I'm kidding. I'm not gonna wait that long. evening.
What are the herb levels at?
I was gonna say, Freer's pack is getting lighter for some reason.
Yeah, your rations are perhaps running low. Iron rations, of course.
Still got goat milk. Plenty of goat milk to go around.
Oh no, the goat you sold was the woman. Now we just have milk. That's
not milk. He's producing something. You're free to drink it.
an entire day has passed since you've stopped. Night approaches. Morning approaches. Afternoon approaches. Hark! Bob says. And in the distance, those of you at the front see a dark speck far, far, far off in the distance. And as time passes, the speck becomes larger and larger and larger. As it approaches, the speck has a, appears to have a shimmer to it, as if hot in the sunny sky. It gets closer and closer, and then it appears to have, it gets close enough, let's say, perhaps 100 yards away. And your best guess is that this speck is about 15 feet in diameter. And you start to make out the crackling fingers of blue energy surrounding it and sparking off what appears to be a rip in the fabric of reality. It gets closer and closer, and those of you at the front can start to see magenta sky beyond the breach, beyond the tear, as it approaches. And eventually, right at the edge in front of the front line, is this tear in the sky, this hole in the sky beyond which you can see magenta sky, clouds, and a strange world beyond.
And it's approaching.
Yeah.
And it is right in front of the front line. It is an otherworldly figure, otherworldly form, and perhaps even Bull in the front line can get a whiff of, I don't know, strange organic smell, perhaps from the flora and fauna that you can see beyond. Strange as it is.
Bull's going to ask the slinger to shoot a rock in.
All right, Gorm will do so.
All right, the sling bullet. You can't miss a target that big, even someone as inexperienced as you. The sling bullet disappears or goes right through the gap and falls to the ground beyond.
Right. Ilteri's going to push his way through. Yeah. Out of the way, fools. Sort of step in.
Ilteri jumps in. Okay.
Let's go, Bob.
Your feet strike what appears to be solid ground. Strangely colored, strangely smelled. The air feels a little bit different, perhaps more humid. But you're on solid ground nonetheless.
Come, fools, before the bridge disappears.
I think that's a great idea. I'm going to Clem and Lingen are going to follow him.
Yeah, Bob, Pip, and Groor.
Yeah, we're all gonna go. All the rope going in. Have to go. All the rope people are going in.
Okay. Okay. Pushing forward.
Rex feels confident with his Drell and Durin. And anybody not going?
Well, if I can.
Dasher 2.0.
Yeah, everybody.
We learned that lesson.
All right. So the rope people are going to untie their rope.
Okay, and now you find yourselves on this strange jungle land that you see before you on the map. And once you jump through, once the last character jumps through,
Delta green.
Let's see, as you step through the hole, your ears pop, and the sudden warmth of this place makes you momentarily dizzy. You're in what must be an entirely different world. The air is misty, but as best as you can tell, the sky is a bright magenta color. You're standing in what appears to be some sort of bamboo forest. But the bamboo is thinner and flatter than you have ever seen. Looking behind you, you cannot see the porthole. Your companions seem to be stepping in through thin air. The air is heavy and has an oppressively intense scent, like intense saffron.
Baby.
Off in the distance, you see a single structure. The mist limits your visibility, but you see a dark structure rising out of the mists ahead. All right. Let's call it there for the session.
That sounds like a good idea.
You've made it through the hole in the sky, or what you imagine is the hole in the sky, into another world. All right. Well done, guys.
A little adventure.
I'm going to send a note out about scheduling the next session. Initially, folks had said, I think most everybody had said that they were going to be available Thursday, which may or may not be the case. I don't know if you guys want to do it and not try to knock it out that quickly, but...
This Thursday?
Yeah. Not tomorrow.
Yeah,
not
anymore for me.
Okay.
Let me double check with that. I might have something going on Thursday.
No worries.
I will email you.
Yeah, I'll send out an email. I'll probably put out a doodle, and we'll pick it up next time. Nice job.